Ladies and gentlemen, Hang On To Your Hat, episode 26, with special guest Hugh Van Kylenberg.
Bad Daddy, you're a naughty boy.
These days, fatherhood is everywhere. You can't get away from it. Not that blokes haven't tried. If you're not a father, you've got a father. You're a son of a dad or a daughter of a bloke. But either way, being a dad is no picnic. The fear, the anger, the confusion and, well, the love, of course. Derek Myers and Dan Lee, together with their special guests, are here to share the highs and lows, the joys and the agony of being a modern dad. But most of all, to let you know that you're not alone.
And there it is. Now, shut up, Dan.
We have our moment's silence during that. We all have to appreciate.
Exactly. I want to jump in first, and I said to Dan, I'm talking first, because I know that Dan loves trying to get a bit of free advice off our guests, and I do too. Welcome, Hugh, who is, well, I know as the chief of the Resilience Project.
I've never been called that before, but I might request that from now on.
The Grand Poobah, perhaps.
The Mastermind.
Yeah. Chief, all those things are good, whatever you want. Just a guy from the Resilience Project the also.
Chief Head Kicker, that's another good one.
It is in my usual way, my research is whatever Dan's told me. So there you go, the Resilience Project, which fascinates the shit out of me because I've got an 11-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl, and it just feels like that is every day, at least twice a day, obstacle where you just want to go, oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah. You know, really, is that a thing?
Yeah. And, what
should I do?
That's funny because I've been running around Australia for almost 6 years giving people advice on how to be resilient, and then I had a child, and all of a sudden I went, oh, actually, it just took on a whole, that's when I actually needed it for the first time properly, because it is so hard.
Yeah, man.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
And I know, and I listen to this podcast, so I know what you guys struggle with, and I love that, and in this room we've got all different ages represented as kids, so we've all got very different struggles, but every age group, every age seems to bring a different challenge, and something where I just think, well, this is what I talk about every day, resilience. So you better practice what you preach because you are under the pump right now.
Yeah.
And so Ben, your son's how old?
Benji is, he'll be turning 3 in a few months. So he's 2 3/4 at the moment.
And he's destroying your life generally or tempting to? I shouldn't say, I've got to stop saying things like that.
I actually want to preface everything I say today. I want to preface by saying I love him more than anything I've ever loved before.
Locked in.
So just don't edit that bit out.
His knuckles are white on the table at the moment. He's holding on.
So I'm just prefacing everything I say with that, but he's certainly challenging us like never before. And some of them are really hard challenges. Some are very funny. Like, the really hard one at the moment, which I find really tough, is the way he treats Penny, my wife. Like, he's just, you know, he's pretty awful to her. Like, he's just, he's so rude to her. And he just, like, last night, she's looked after him all day. She says, I'll take her for a bath. And he literally pushed her away and goes, no, I don't want you. I want Dad. And she's shattered, you know, like, she's devastated. And that breaks my heart as well because I know how much it hurts her. So there's that. But then there's other stuff. Like, this morning, the challenge was just the embarrassment of, I woke up this morning, he was in bed with me and he's curled up in a ball, so his bum was on my shoulder and he woke me with a massive fart on my neck. Like, he farted on my neck. I was like, well, that's an interesting way to wake up. And he thought it was very funny, so he pissed himself laughing. An hour later, my mother-in-law comes over to look after him for the day, lovely lady. And just, he was standing there and I said, what have you been up to this morning, Benji? And he says to my mother-in-law, he said, when he gets excited, he starts the sentence with and. He was going, and he kept saying, and I said, yeah, what happened? And he said, and this morning, he calls himself Binny. He can't say Benji. So he said, and this morning, Dada farted on Binny's neck. And I was like, whoa, no. It was the other way around. That's not what happened.
Let's go to the video camera.
So there's all, every, like, you know, some challenges are emotionally, they're heartbreaking. Others are just embarrassing.
Let me tell you this thing this morning, right? So last night, when I was trying to fix the where the washing machine pipe goes into the pipe underneath
which
the sink.
Is very difficult,
right? Because it gets blocked up with stuff, right? So, but I accidentally broke it off, which means that there was a big hole in the pipe under under the sink in the laundry. So this morning we had a surprise pants shit. like just before kinder, like, which he doesn't generally do.
Is he still
in?
Sammy.
Oh, Sammy. Sorry.
Yeah, clarify that.
Come on, mate.
Sorry, darling. I'll shoot my pants again.
So, anyway, so I and
is he
and
in
I,
nappy still or he's not?
No,
nappy?
No, no, no. Oh, he's right, like okay. He's four and a half. He goes to kinder. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Sammy, future Sammy, hearing this, but this, you know, every now and then they just. I think it's personally, I think there's a little regression because of Luna getting so much attention because he kind of loathes her at the moment. He's right. Like, I want to put her in the bin. Get rid of it. Yeah. Get it out. Yeah. He's like this. So I think he might be shitting because he seems gleeful about shitting in his pants a little bit. Like the,
bit of attention.
Because anyway, the older kids shitting their pants is really unpleasant. Like it's unpleasant at the best of times. But anyway, so I'm going, oh, the food for varieties fuck's are sake. I'm for fuck's sake. We're trying to not say that. And then I go to the laundry to wash the shit out of his undies.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten about the hole under the sink. So, so I'm standing there.
Did you
going,
have your white Dunlop volleys up?
And it's all just pouring out onto the floor. And I went, oh, for fuck's sake.
Get some video cameras around that like, house, isn't Dan, that, for like, God's sake.
How often do you say that, though, as a dad? Oh, for fuck's sake. It's like, I've never said it so much in my life about having the next last 2 3/4 years. It's
I know, and I sometimes say it to him, you know, like, I can't help it. Yeah. And he goes, you just said fuck.
Does he
and
say
I
that
go,
too?
I know. I shouldn't say fuck. But I've told him he shouldn't say fuck in front of his grandmother and at other places. You know, I told him a lot of people don't like it. It's hard because I like swearing and I don't. And you know what? He doesn't use it. I say you can use it at home. Yeah. I probably shouldn't.
I told you about baby Tom. He sliced his leg really right open, full big scar. Gory. I wasn't there.
I would have fainted.
Tommy, he said, oh, I sat there. And I said, did you cry? And everything goes, oh, just sat there. And all the grown-ups came over and they all looked kind of worried. And I just said, and he looked at me like it was a – we used to call him Edward the Confessor because he just like blah, just confesses everything. He's going, I did swear a bit. I said, oh, yeah, how'd you go? He said, it was awesome. I just went – oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
How old is he then?
He's 11.
Sounding like Jack Thompson.
At the time. And he just kept throwing out, and he kept telling me, and he was going, and it was awesome. It was like they didn't even hear me. Because they were all ghosted out, terrified, because there was just this gory kind of situation. And then I realized he's just played me as well.
Yeah,
because he's counting how many times he's got away with telling me the story.
You know,
it's not that important.
I think you should warn Penny too, perhaps, that it cannot sometimes happen that your child will come to you and say, I don't love you and I will never love you.
Oh.
So just so that she knows that might happen, because it's happened to me and it's happened to a few people I know, and there's no way to cope with that very well. And obviously they're just trying things out. So just don't be shocked if they say that, because apparently they don't mean it.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing I've learned is that you just be – you can't like
– yeah.
Even people saying – when we first said we're having a baby, they were saying, oh, well, nothing will prepare you for – and I was like, well, I know I'm not going to get sleep. I know it's going to be hard, but I had no idea how hard. Like I really – and you get – the first few months it's in this bubble of excitement and love and you sort of just push your way through it. But then – I'm like, I kept going, well, when he gets older, it'll get easier. When he can walk, it'll be easier. Now, it's just 2 1/2. He's just, he can't sit still, so you can't do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel bad saying this because I've got one, you know, like we do have a second on the way, so we're due in Feb. So we've got a girl coming in Feb, which Benji wasn't happy about, but.
That'll be fun.
Oh, that's right. Tell him what he said. That's so funny.
Oh, yeah. So we said we're having a baby and he was pretty flat about that. Like he was genuinely upset about that, which is, I understand.
Mm.
And then he said, but he seemed to warm to the idea of having a brother. He said, okay, I'll have a brother. He's like, okay, you can have a baby, but as long as you make it a boy. And then we found it was a girl and I told him, I said, mate, we're having a girl. And he was pretty disappointed. I said, do you have a name? Like we'd love your help. You could help us name your sister. What do you want to call her? And he said, I'll call her brother. And I went, no, it's a girl.
Workaround, buddy.
Yeah, I know. And I said, but it's a girl, mate. Any other names? And he said, Lady Brother. His sister's going to be called Lady
Compromise.
Brother. Yeah, exactly. So,
but see, that's the funny thing. That Lady Brother will come up throughout her life now.
Oh, definitely.
Like, all the kids, the second borns, were given some kind of name by the firstborn.
Yeah, that's it. It could be Lady Brother.
Yeah, it comes back. It's a 21st speech thing.
Magnificent how, you know, whoever designed us designed us to forget all this shit.
Oh, that's totally.
Magnificent. Yeah. How many people, when you had a newborn baby, came up to you, all genders, all ages, and said, remember this, treasure it, because you won't remember.
Yeah, it's true. It's
good. And they say it to you over and over and over again.
Well, the fact that you want to do it again is proof that you forget.
Yeah, it's absolute proof.
I mean, Penny's – I mean, the actual birth was the most traumatic thing. Penny was really had some awful
20 right,
hours
yeah.
of like really some pretty full-on stuff happened to her.
Mm.
And I remember the first night we got to ourselves, which was 3 nights after Benji was born. Penny's parents said, we'll look after Benji, go out for dinner together. And we sat there and we tried to relive and talk about the – and we both just cried the whole time through happiness, but then also the trauma of it. And then for months we were like, oh, we can never do that again. That was – and then we've just kind of forgotten about it. And I said to Penny, do you remember how bad it is? And she said, I know it was bad, but to be honest, I just don't remember how or what happened. Like,
there's biology for you, man. That's the meaning of life, isn't it? The meaning of life is to breed. Whether you know, that's what biology wants you to do.
Yeah.
You get this huge case of you're not the boss of me. I know I do when I go, oh, my God, the system is making me want to do this again.
Yeah.
You go, that's not fair. You're not the boss of me. And you go, oh, well, you are.
Well, you are.
Because old school body, you just it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And there's only one thing I remember is that the advice, I haven't got much advice, hang on to your hat being the main one.
Mm.
But
that's the best advice.
Yeah. With the new baby, do you remember this one? I was we gave the existing child, let's call it, or the oldest one, right?
Yeah.
Gets a present from the new baby.
Yeah, we did that.
I don't know if that's clever or not.
That's a great idea.
But I'll say that and it they get a positive, they get a bit of a positive vibe from this little
baby
that's going to draw all the love from the parents.
Yeah, but it came bearing gifts. That's good. Yeah.
If your firstborn's pretty sharp and you bring a big, you know, trampoline in or something, he'll be like, what the fuck is going on? No, it's just a present.
Here's 2 tickets to Disney.
This is fucked. This baby's never. They do. You can see when they know 17. It's not leaving. Like Sammy got to a point with Luna. You could see in his eyes this thing going, oh, my God, it's not fucking going away.
This is it.
This is staying. Mm. And then the blatant kicking starts and all that stuff.
Do you fantasize about a time in the future where they'll be best mates and they'll think about that, or is it too far away to even think about?
No, you do. Well, I do, yeah, when they're battering each other.
And let me tell you, it really is heartwarming
when you see it start to happen.
You know, if we're walking through Northlands or something like that, and they just, for some weird reason, out of the blue, they're just arm in arm, just walking along, having a
stop it.
You just fall to pieces. I take photos, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, quick. That's and then people are like, security, what's this guy doing? it really does want that, and it does happen. But they act like they absolutely fucking hate each other.
When Derek goes to Northlands, he has to put a suit on. Otherwise, they think he's abducted these children because he's so scruffy looking. Like, look at that scruffy guy with 2 kids. No, I'm their father.
I usually just tell them I'm their grandfather. It's a lot easier.
We're the similar one now. There's a park in Mornington near where we used to live, and I'd take Benji there. And at the base of all the play equipment, there's a little – it's a ship, so like it's a wooden ship.
Yeah,
and
I know.
At the bottom of the ship, there's a little door you can go through, and you sit there, and I can just fit. Like I can just cram in. There's a little bench there. Benji and I sit next to each other. I remember one day some parents, this little girl came in. She was about probably 2, and I started chatting to her. And this dad and mum popped their head in the window. They couldn't see Benji. They went, excuse me. And I went, oh, my son's in here. My apostle's in here. So this like 38-year-old man sitting under, that's talking to this little kids. And I was like, I promise my son's here.
How you doing?
And he went really quiet. I was like, Benji, say something.
What's your name? Yeah. I've just been sitting around here.
They are a handy little token to do some
child to creep
shit.
Around.
Well, to do childlike
maybe
stuff.
Maybe not childlike shit. You can really, you know,
I'll tell you what
eat
they do.
Some bad food and do some bad things.
Well, that's true.
And the other thing they do is I've found like one of the things we talk about with work is how powerful connection is for your mental health. I just talk to everyone now. Like if I go for a walk by myself, I can't stop and speak to people. Like it's weird. Like you can't. But with a kid, with a 2.5-year-old, I'm walking around with him and old ladies will stop and go, oh, he's really cute. And I'll say, thanks, what about Benji? No, no, but I mean, we'll just start talking. We have these conversations that that you wouldn't usually have. And I love that. I really love that.
Because it's like a flag for you that says you're safe.
Yeah, it totally.
Because you've got a kid with you.
The other time I had that was when I was on crutches. When I snapped my hamstring on crutches, everyone talks to you. And was like, oh, what happened? And you have those lovely conversations. Mm. And I remember thinking, that was nice when I... And then I have a son and it's the same thing. Everyone stops to talk to you and I love it.
When I was in New York, when Missy was touring, so she went up and down the East Coast and I stayed in Manhattan with Sammy and he was one or just or about one.
Was that pretty awesome?
It was sucked a little bit in that I couldn't go to all of the things I wanted to because they weren't kid appropriate and they were at night. But I went to mainly playgrounds and parks and things. But the upside of it was that when you're walking around with a one-year-old that's cute looking, or just any one-year-old probably, even the ugly ones, they people talk to you, as you say, you know. Like people, and so women will talk to you on the train and on the subway, whereas, you know, if you were just a 40-year-old bloke, no one's going to talk to you. So I met all sorts of people and they said, oh, you should go to this thing and that thing. Yeah. And I feel like I really got to know those New Yorkers in a way that I wouldn't ordinarily.
It's funny you say that. New York's actually the place where I, for the first time in my life, had this huge desire to have kids. And it was because I hadn't even met Penny yet, so I was single, but I was with a mate and we'd been for a bike ride, I think, and underneath the Brooklyn Bridge, I think, there's a nice little park, and I saw a guy who would have been maybe about 40 and he had two twins with him. Now, knowing what it's like, it would have been nothing like that, but it looked so – he had one sleeping on his chest, the other one running around.
Right.
I can't remember how old they were exactly, but – and I chatted to him. I said, oh, that looks pretty good. And he said, yeah, my wife's I don't work. My wife's working full time. I sort of look after the kids. And he looked so happy. I was like, oh, my God, I want that so much.
Yeah, right.
Now knowing how hard it is to have one, I can't even imagine how hard it really was for him. But that's the first time I went, I would like to have kids.
Yeah,
it was in New York. It was a similar –
And it was twins.
It was twins.
Holy cow.
It's amazing that did it, twins especially.
But it wasn't a representation. One was asleep. Yeah. One was just walking around happily. I'm sure the second I turned
around,
it was
2 weeks of sunny weather on a Scottish holiday.
Yeah.
Let's move here. That's what my wife is like. Everyone's like, well, you do understand. This is not real.
Save yourselves.
Get back on the boat.
Exactly. The second child, though, too, just remembering what you're saying about having one coming, you know, like all the same things start to happen. You go, and you remember, I remember this from last time. The difference is it's like, oh, not this again. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like it was cute the first time, some of that stuff. But then on the other hand, you don't fret about it as much.
So my question to both of you is having two twice as hard as having one?
No, it's about four or five times.
For fuck's sake.
Sorry about that. That felt good, Dan.
You did. It felt so good.
Both of you said no straight away, so I thought the answer was no, it's not. It's actually like, but no, it's four or five times.
It is a nightmare. Sorry. No, look, no, I'm a nightmare. That's what has happened, as you know anyway, is the second one for me came and created a level of chaos in the house that highlighted my inability to focus on more than one thing at once.
Right,
so what it does do is it just shows you where, if you've got existing mental health problems or brain types, it's going to kind of point it out to me straight away. Like I've gone and had a lot of therapy since the second one, and I think it's just because suddenly there's noise coming from two directions. So I've realized stuff about what I can and can't cope with. Yeah. So I reached my limit with the second one for reasons that were to do with me and not to do with them.
Yep, understand.
And so now I've got to put things in place, which I should do anyway for my own mental health and resilience.
My belief is that you don't, as I say all the time, it doesn't get easier, you get more broken. But maybe we'll adapt it for today. You get more resilient for now. Let's call resilient instead of broken.
You could have a sister program to yours. Like everywhere you appear, he'll book the venue next door. Fuck that guy. He reckons it's going to be all right? No way. You're fucked, mate.
He's only got one kid. Don't listen to him.
Do. I think I was all right. Yeah, it was full on. But I'd already let go of any... because I was an old dad. You're clearly not. But Dan's a reasonably old dad. But you're kind of already tired. You might be physically tired, but also a lot of things are said and done. So you're not resenting a lifestyle or anything like that. You're not
that's the same as me. I feel
very
happy.
How are you going to pull back your, because your career, your job, your passion is becoming huge and well, it's not really your career, is it?
I call it,
it's what you love to do. Your need to.
I started the Resilience Project because my sister had a mental illness that was just, it was anorexia nervosa, and it kind of stopped our family, a very happy family, being happy. It stopped us being happy. So I became, as a teenager, I was like, oh, how do I make mum and dad happy again? And I became fascinated by that. And I didn't find an answer to what makes people happy. I felt till I was 28, and it's a long story, but I discovered a few things that we can do that make us feel happier. And then all of a sudden I started telling primary school kids about it, and they loved it. And then school said, you should tell teachers about it. So I told teachers, and then all of a sudden now it's this thing where, like, it's, you know, sell out shows around the country, and it's everywhere.
Mm.
So, and we're fully booked for like a year in advance. And then Penny says, we're having another baby. And I went, I was so happy. And then I went, shit, how's this going to work? Like, not how's it going to work. I know it's going to work, but like, I've already booked these talks in a year ago. I'm going to have to tell people I'm not coming or do it. And Penny's like, yeah, of course you are. Like, you can. I went, yeah. So I don't know how it's going to work. I'm sure it'll find a way. But I've actually found myself going from the second I found out we're having a second, I've found the last 2.5 years extremely hard, like emotionally, physically. I'm exhausted all the time, as every parent is. And then the second I found out there's two coming, I went, oh no, this is actually relaxing. I've just got one. I still do get a bit of time to myself occasionally. So I'm going to love the next 9 months so much and just enjoy this.
Mm.
And I feel like in my head I'm going, and then I'm just going to give up and go, well, I lose. it's not about me anymore. You know, it's like,
pick up the pieces in the future sometime.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I cannot wait to meet our daughter. It's going to be amazing. It's just, I think I've resigned myself to the fact that, my gosh, it is going to be hard.
Look, a lot of people, I know we really enjoyed that joke saying it's four times as hard.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that. That's terrible. It might not be. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It might not be. It might be easier.
Hey, it's okay. I have to apologize for that. You, say
you never know.
I don't know how on earth it'd be easier, but yeah.
Well, that's some crazy shit, man, though, isn't it? And, you know, it's lucky you love them.
Do you think that at some stage, because of the whole resilience thing, and that's your career, you're going gangbusters and all that, having to be, put yourself under this huge pressure, is that kind of a part of this, some kind of part of this journey to then come out going, right, I'm now
I had stages last year where I've never felt like that before, but it was at Benji's. He doesn't sleep. Like, he hasn't properly slept through the night yet. And, you know, so we have had terrible, shocking issues with sleep where, you know, I was doing 2 or 3 talks a day, like big presentations to big audiences on 2 or 3 hours sleep. Because I didn't want Penny to be by herself getting up every night. So I was getting up as well. And there was one night I'd done 3 talks for the day on about 2 or 3 hours sleep. And it was like a few months building up. And I went to do a talk to 300 parents at a school. And in the car on the way out there, I got really dizzy. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I feel really dizzy. But then it went away. And then I'm talking to them. This is to your question, exactly your point. Yeah. I'm talking to them. I started to get this really unfamiliar dizziness. I was like, oh, this is strange. But then I thought, no, I'm talking about resilience. I'm going to keep going. This would be a cool story.
Mm.
And then my vision started to get really blurry. And I was like, shit, I can't see properly. Nah, this would be an even better story. I'm still going. Look, I'm still talking. And then I couldn't see. I went completely blank.
Jeez.
And I was like, fuck, this is an amazing story. I've gone blind and I'm still talking. So I'm up there going, sort of, and then I just collapsed. And I went back and I was taken to emergency. And it was the doctor saying, like, I explained my job and he said, I think it's like, you've got an injury from public speaking. Like, you're doing too much you're just doing too much and you're not sleeping. And it was just an exhaustion. I collapsed from exhaustion in front of, I'd called on all my reserves and there's nothing left. And that to me was like, my mum always says to me, it's all very well you running around the country helping people, but who's looking after you? Who's looking after your mental health? And
you got to get high on your own supply.
Yeah. At
some stage.
So what do you think about that? Have you got some plans?
I'm good now. Like, I hired this guy called Ben, who's our general manager, and the thing was, mate, can you really, from a business point of view, sort out the resilience project? Because we are that in demand, it's ridiculous. So I want to make sure we really make hay while the sun shines, but also, can you look after me? And he said, yeah, and he has put in so much effort to make sure I rarely do more than one talk a day. I do stuff now that I have to do for my mental health. And for me, it's mainly exercise. That's what.
Yeah.
I did something really weird, which I don't know if any other, well, I know no other 39-year-olds in Victoria do this. I started competing in athletics for 400 metres. And I know I'm the only reason because I competed in the Victorian Masters Championships. And I got to the day and I was like, because all throughout the season you compete against early men in their early 20s. I get my ass kicked every weekend. But I train all week for it and I take it really seriously. I don't tell many people, but I take it very seriously. I've got so fit from it and I love it. But then I turned up to the Masters and they read it. Okay, they said, okay, Victorian Masters Championships, State Championships for men aged 35 to 40, lane one, Hugh van Kylenberg. And there was a pause and he goes, oh, that's it. You're running by yourself. There's no one else here. And so I went, well, that's a gold medal. You beauty. So I ran the race by myself, won a gold medal, got on a podium by myself. I'm like waving to Penny. She's like, you're a fucking idiot.
Take the Bradbury every day of the week.
That's exactly what it was. So.
Hey, you're onto something there. Yeah. People could be doing this in all sorts of
things. One of my mates said to me, what other events are there and who's not competing in them? So anyway, it's a long story to answer your question, but I've found that exercising to me daily with a bit of a plan to sort of compete at some point to hold me accountable to it has been massive. And sometimes I get up at like 5:30 in the morning, I go and do all my training and I'm done by 6:30, 7 in the morning. Or getting out of bed at the time is awful. But I get home and I just feel nothing could stop me then. Like I'm like, I've got out of bed at 5:30 and it's 3 degrees and I've just run in the rain, looking after a baby that's crying. That's nothing. Like I've just done that. And I feel so good about myself. I don't do it all the time, but when I do, my gosh, I feel better. And for me, I'm not saying everyone should go and exercise at 5:30 in the morning, but
good.
But I heard a saying the other day, which I love, and I think it was when you win the morning, you win the day. And I found that if I can get up before Benji and get some stuff done so I feel on top of
my mental health,
it really helps.
What do you think about the idea of finding your own thing and then sort of working that? I mean, I'm doing it. Dan and I are doing it. We discovered by accident. If we sit here, we don't have to be blokey or uncomfortable about spilling our guts.
Because we've got microphones.
Because we've got microphones and we're making a product, right? And that's fantastic. And you found it works. We'll get to your show in a minute.
Yeah.
But and I found that now I'm doing another one about being fat guy called the Good Paddock. And that's the same format. I'm finding dudes are coming in, big dudes, and we're talking about our journeys.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And now I'm doing, you know, like working it all in because I'm obsessed with podcasting, just going, fuck it. I don't care what anyone says. And they might tease me about it, you know, but I'm just working everything I need to do into this, becoming a better dad.
Yeah.
You know, sorting out my health and all that in that field.
Well,
so with
I think you're onto them. There are so many things you're doing like through this podcast, which are great for people listening, but it ticks so many boxes as far as your well-being. Like it's, and Dan and I have discussed this before, but it's kind of like a purpose. Like it's something you think about during the week when you're not here that makes you feel happy when you think about it. When you think, oh, I've got the podcast coming up, that makes you feel happy because you're sort of fulfilling a purpose. And often a purpose, a really fulfilling one, is about, it's for other people as well. Like like I listen to your podcast and I feel better about myself because I think I'm not the only one struggling. Mm. So there's that. But then there's also you guys make yourself really vulnerable. And when you make yourself vulnerable, it brings enormous amounts of joy. And that's what you do. Like your podcast is doing so many things that tick off, you know, things that we know are good for us, research-based things that are good for us. So, it's doing something that really speaks to a bigger purpose is huge.
The vulnerability means a lot to me. It helps me so much when I hear people do that. If you hear someone in podcasts just sort of open up about something, it suddenly changes your whole outlook, doesn't it? Because you're not alone. We're all on this. You're suddenly all in the same boat together. It does an amazing thing.
We have this thing in Australia, like this massive shame epidemic, where due to a whole lot of varieties, we all carry shame about. We all feel shame about something, and I think when you make yourself vulnerable and you discuss that stuff, you open yourself up to the other end of the spectrum, which is empathy, where.
Mm.
You know, people know how to treat you and know you, they warm to you because you've made yourself vulnerable. And they, you know, like Missy tells me about your podcast and I listened to it that night And I was like, I love these guys because you just made yourself really vulnerable. And that's, it opens you up to love as well. Like it's huge, but we're not good at it in Australia. We find it a hard thing to do for a whole variety of reasons, but it's, but your podcast hits on so many little touch points that we know are good for mental health.
That's good news. That is good. Yeah.
Whether it was an accident or by design.
It's funny. Like, I think it's, for me, it started from trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Ironically. Like, yeah. Look, it started, like, if you make yourself vulnerable, well, see, because it can go the other way. I was using it destructively when I was doing stand up and drinking a lot, and because I'd go and behave very badly and do stuff that I was ashamed of, and then I'd come in and make a joke of it. I'd confess to stuff, but it was this perverse way of justifying terrible behaviour that I would then continue.
Okay. Yeah.
But what it did do was make me go, have, like, not mind telling people the truth.
Yeah.
But then it definitely did swap, and then I know that if you're, well, you, it's like your conversation about the bartender.
Yes.
Or is that kind of like that? I can't remember. But it's like you it just opens so much up to connection with someone. If you just say something honest.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It changes everything.
The story about the bartender is just that I didn't take my phone. I'm trying not to take my phone places, and I left it at home, and I was having a beer with a mate, and my mate went to the toilet, and because I didn't have a phone, I actually spoke to someone, and the bartender told me that he was battling, because he was going through a breakup.
Yeah.
I automatically, and I could tell he was having a bit of a shit one just from his mood. So when he served us, I was like, what an arsehole. Not an arsehole, but I was like, mate,
what's up with this guy?
Yeah. So, and then he says, I'm going through a breakup, and I felt enormous compassion for him and love for him, and I've been through a horrific breakup, horrific. And so straight away I was like, oh, that poor bastard. I felt for him. We chatted and we really bonded over it because he made himself vulnerable. If he just said, yeah, I'm fine, why? Then I'm like, oh, whatever, mate, like, get over yourself.
You know, I found that even with people that I really don't like. AA is a great, I mean, I got sober, and going to sort of meetings where you've got people from all different walks of life, people, guys that I would be scared of ordinarily. And I mightn't even like their demeanor when I meet them, but then they sit down and they start talking and they say something really vulnerable, and you suddenly have this love.
Yeah, totally.
The way they physically look changes to you. Like a menacing look turns into the face of someone suffering, and the compassion you have for that, rather than being fearful of their kind of frightening appearance, you suddenly go, wow, this is a guy with a life who's gone through hardship.
And everyone's got a story. We've all got a story.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I've found that I do a lot of work with the Port Adelaide Football Club in the AFL, and I just got up and told them my story to start the session, and then quite a few of them said, can I chat to you one-on-one? It was like 11 of them, and they all came in and just sat down and just told me their story.
Yeah.
And Port Adelaide is a club I didn't really like them because they're from Adelaide basically, and I'm a Hawthorn supporter.
Fair enough.
And so I just didn't. And then all of a sudden, these boys told me their stories, and I loved them. Like, I can actually say I love these boys.
Yeah.
And they played Hawthorn the other day, and I realised I was breaking for Port Adelaide, even though I'm a Hawthorn supporter. I was like, this is weird. What the fuck's going on here? And I was like, no, it's because I love these boys because they made themselves vulnerable. They shared their story, and I have so much love for them.
So you can change people's allegiance with vulnerability.
Yeah, pretty much.
But this is what you could use this in as a new hippie method of warfare. Instead of going and shooting people, you just go up to people on the battlefield and say,
hug.
You know what? Yeah, hug. No, but you know what I mean? Like, you can change, shift people's. I've seen it with documentaries about white supremacists and stuff. When people go in, who was it? Maybe it was Louis Theroux or someone went in and some hard. You can see that they're suffering for, and that's their views have come out of some grievance or suffering they've had. And maybe it was a woman. Who was it? And just by opening up to them, and they just stopped being Nazis.
Well, that's why.
it was weird.
That's to that point. I've always thought we need more female leaders in the world because women are better at that.
Totally.
And rather than two men like having this ego off around from two different competing nations, you get two women together, I feel like they're going to be more vulnerable with each other. Someone said the other day, Tim Elliott, would you ever get in politics? And I was like, I think I'd be bad because I'd meet another world leader and say, I'll be really honest, like, we don't know what the fuck we're doing with our military stuff. Like, we're really battling with this. Like, yeah. And then they'd go, oh, yeah, no, so are we. And then, but they wouldn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
But I often think we just need more. The answer to that is we need more female leaders around the world.
You haven't watched Veep, have you?
No, I haven't. Penny has. Penny's upset. Penny loves it, but so I think I need to.
You're right. Look, that's one. I've said that a lot. I've said I think, like, in terms of gender equality in the workplace and all that sort of stuff, the one place where I think it should be mandatory for there to be 80% women is politics.
Totally.
Like, otherwise, I think it should be on merit, really. And I'm not interested in quotering, but except for politics.
If there's an imbalance, a world-class historical imbalance, then it can only be there for the wrong reasons, using the wrong techniques. Like, if women don't get to be in charge for decades, centuries, then it must be by force and sneaky evil shit to stop it being there. That's my theory. It's dramatic.
Maybe. But then there's also some
parenthood.
But some areas women and men naturally favour over others. It's not all about, you know what I mean? Like some jobs, no matter what you do, they're going to be heavy on men and others on women. But the opportunity needs to be equal and made available. Yeah. Like, women and men need to all have the exact, like, total encouragement and ability to be that stuff.
But I'm saying the manifestation of inequality and all the leadership and all the corporates and everything everywhere is kind of like a version of how Kim Jong-un takes care of business. You know what I mean? Like, it's just get rid of any possible enemies, keep it down.
Well, some of it would have
come. It does look like a very unpleasant place to be as a woman in politics in Australia. Looks like it's awful. The stories you hear coming out and they just sound like disgusting.
And imagine
men.
Being asked,
like,
about your hair all the time.
They're the worst kids in the private school.
Fuck.
Yeah, totally.
It's dreadful.
Just disgusting.
Yeah. No wonder. Yeah. Anyway, children. but hey, listen, because the extraordinary thing is that you went to India and, like, cut a long story short, but the kids that you encountered that were very poor had a different approach to life and a different sort of like to do with gratitude and what they appreciated in life, and were less mentally ill, if at all, than kids in Australia. And
I obviously didn't have access to any data or surveys on the mental health with these kids. But as a teacher, I'd spent 4 years in schools in Australia. Then I came back and taught for 2 years after I returned, and now I've visited over 1,000 schools in the country in the last 8 years. So I've spent a lot of time in schools with kids. Mm. And then I was only in India for 3 months. I was only in this village teaching for 3 months, but I still claim I've never seen joy like it. I've never seen a happier community in my entire life. And these kids, the three things I saw them do were that the first one was they were so grateful for the things that they had. And I'm talking about, like, shoes, clothes, a river where they could go and get water from. You know, they were so grateful for that stuff.
For the stuff they already had.
Yeah, they thought it was, they were just like, they were proud of it. They were proud they had a river to go and get water from, you know. Mm. They did a form of meditation every morning for like half an hour before school, and they were just so kind. They were always doing things for each other, and there's no competition. There was no – I didn't see the behaviour you see in schools in Australia around bullying and around – it's just beautiful kids who are just – so it was totally different to what I'd seen here.
Yeah.
And it was very life-changing to see them.
So you got this massive contrast.
Yeah, and I did. It was huge. It was, and then I actually came back and taught at a, I don't know why I did this, but a very wealthy private school in Melbourne. And I just, like, this school that's put a lot of money into a wellbeing program. And I just saw these kids that were just, it was too much of a reverse culture shock. I was like, these kids are so entitled, and they... And the smallest things just throw them off kilter completely, because yet I'm seeing these kids in India who sleep on the side of the road, and they're just like, they just roll with the punches, you know. That's just, things go wrong. Yeah, that's life.
Do you think, because I mean, look, I'm opposed to social media and all that stuff, and it is the thalidomide of our generation. Yeah. I think as you've talked about the dangers of that and the problem that we're going to see as a result of that. But do you think that... part of it needs to be teaching people how to be resilient about the existing, like, rather than banning the internet, for example, we need to help kids to cope with and see stuff for what it really represents. Like, for example, when you get when Missy gets hassle on social media, she has to work very hard to remember that this is one person out of 50 or 100 or whatever, and put that into that. It's just that you can hear the contents of their head when, you know what I mean? And be able to put it in. So there needs to be some training in that too.
It's a fascinating one because I feel like it's hard to educate the kids when you don't know what's coming next. Like 15 years ago, we didn't know if someone said, what's the next big thing to happen? People are going like, we're going to go to Mars. I don't know. Flying cars. I don't think anyone saw the internet happening. Yeah. Like no one's predicted that happening. And so we're scrambling to go, fuck, how do we deal with this? Like, how do we protect our kids from this beast that we didn't see coming? And part of me often wonders what's next. Like, what's the next thing that's coming up? Like, I watch not a lot of episodes, but is it Black Mirror? Is that what it's called? Black Mirror. And they have some pretty scary scenarios for the future. But I'm like, well, how really? Like, one of them, I don't know if you guys have seen it, the one where you can have microchips and you can actually watch your memories. You can sit back and watch your memories. Like, it's so you can go back and go, when I was three, that, and you watch it. And people, but then one in the story, one of them, the guy or the girl catches their partner cheating because they have a memory of them talking to someone at a house party and they go back to the memory and zoom in on it so they can lip read and see what the person said and they realize they were cheating by doing that. And so I was like, is Benji going to have a microchip that he can like go back? And the other day I said to Penny, in 80 years' time, like when Benji's 83, will he be able to go back in time to now? I could get off my phone. He might see me on my phone here. Like, is he going to be able to come back to this time? Will he be able to see this because of that memory thing? So who knows what's coming next?
Yeah.
I haven't answered your question at all, but...
No. But that's all right. What Puritan future culture is going to have that technology and go back and catch you wanking in some at home and go, you wanked this many times a day, you're going to jail? This is what I think about. You know what I mean? What if it's like a puritanical and they've got access to your memories?
Yeah. And that's the future, future leadership. Like Donald Trump is just he's like launching the future of that because there won't be, in the past, it was like, oh, I better not do that because that means I won't be able to be president or prime minister because it's on record. Now everything is technically no one. Will ever be able to be prime minister.
If you can hear me, future, I know that this is being played in a courtroom of the future as evidence. I know it's happening. So the jury who are listening to this, and I'm 80 and I'm sitting in the dock.
It's a class action. It's Benji, my heart Tom, was Clover. Right.
I meant well. I've always done the best I could.
It's the kids taking a class action against us. That's what's going on in the courtroom. For talking about their pooing their pants. You're gone, mate. That story cost you at least 20.
They're going to have to harden the fuck up.
Space credits.
Do you have that? Do you have that chapter to your resilience? Harden the fuck up chapter.
I do. I didn't talk about it when you came to my show. Though. There is a part where I talk about how this generation of parents, quite seriously, has just gone. We are way too keen to fight our kids' battles for them. Like this, you know, it's got ridiculous. Like the level of how, like, it used to be helicopter parenting and now it's become they're actually fighting their kids' battles for them. So you guys would have been the same as me, but when I got in trouble at school, I'd always go, oh shit, now I gotta go home and deal with mum and dad. Yep. And I'd go home to mum and dad and they would back up the teacher 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And I'd say things to mum like, no mum, it's not fair because this actually happened at lunchtime. So that's a mum would go, no, I don't care, life's not fair, deal with it.
Right.
And so I'd go and I dealt with it and then I left school and things happened to me that were unfair. And I was okay with it. But now kids are, they get in trouble. They go home to their mum and dad, tell them, and then the parents will send an email to the school going, just so you know, this happened at lunchtime. That's on my son. That doesn't work. Parents have to be on the same side of the teachers if they want their kids to become resilient.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you do not experience adversity, you will not become resilient.
Yes.
And school's a great place to experience adversity because you've got so many people around you to support you and be there for you to pick you up.
Mm.
We are just so scared. Parents these days don't want their kids to fail. We failed all the time growing up, whether it was tripping over and cutting your knee, whether it was falling off the monkey bars you're climbing too high. But Parents these days are way too keen to wrap their kids in bubble wrap and make sure nothing goes wrong.
Yeah, they want the kid in the helicopter with them now.
Yeah,
and it's, that's crazy. And it's disastrous for when they get out because the world's not going to be as sympathetic.
Yep.
So they get out there and they do something wrong and they go to fucking jail or someone decks them.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to, like the thing I said way back, Scott, with you, that he's a stand-in for the world. He's got to at least, he can't be totally kind of compassionate all the time. No. They've got to have a sense of,
what's my child going to need in the real world?
What's he going to, exactly.
And like, I mean, I see this in schools a lot. I think they're moving away from it a bit, but this, like I saw at a mate's house the other day, he goes, you'll love this, have a look at this. And on the, he said, hey mate, show Hugh what you got at school the other day. And he showed me a trophy. I said, oh, what's that for? And he goes, high jump. And I went, did you win? And he goes, no, I came seventh. And he had a trophy.
Trophy?
Yeah. So like Jesus. This whole trophy generation where kids get a prize for turning up.
Yeah,
you don't get a prize for turning up in real life.
Can't
you
do
have to be really good
to
get a prize.
Can't
so
do that to
if
them,
a kid
you?
Does well, give them a prize. If they don't do well, say good on you for having a crack.
And teach them to deal with losing.
Yeah, totally.
But it's the same with the internet thing. Teach kids how to deal with the bullying. Mm. Don't just legislate and don't just ban the internet. Teach kids to treat that as it should be treated, which is that these are fucking assholes who say stupid shit and we have to, you know what I mean? It's got to be, it's got to come from both directions a bit because, they're going to get out there and you won't be allowed to do any art because you won't be allowed to say anything about anything. Characters, you know, writers will be sued for their villain character saying something when it's a villain. Like, where does it all end?
Yeah, if it doesn't, that's
paper
the thing.
Paper-thin skinned.
No one wants it to be Tarquin's fault. Let's face it. Poor baby Tarquin. He cops
it
pretty hard.
You got it in.
But I've got it in for Tarquin. But no one wants it to be Tarquin's fault. I cannot believe that my sister-in-law works in a posh school as a primary teacher and is absolutely legendarily good at her job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. Over all the years, hearing the stories about people... Well, it's a girl's school, so I can't. It's not Tarquin. I need a female version of that.
Yeah. Tarquina.
Right? Little Tarquina, you know, and it's just, it almost is half the work is dealing with parents. Going, what's going on
absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely.
Like you've send a kid to a private school, you've hired the best professionals in the field, allegedly. There's a corporation or a system of management that are hiring the best they can to make the best possible product.
Yeah.
So just fucking relax.
Yeah,
if you go to the best hospital, you don't start a war with the surgeons and everything. You have to trust them at some
point. But even when you're like, when I get my tax done halfway through the year, I don't march into the accountant's office and say, hey, do my tax like this. I've got no idea what I'm talking about.
Hmm.
It's just that we need to give our teachers a respect to go, no matter where they go to school, this is not my area of expertise. And if they do something that's unfair for my child, it's going to be good for them.
Yeah.
And if they make a mistake, well, I'll tell you now, they're going to make a mistake because they're humans and we're imperfect. So they're going to make a mistake at some point. So that's, fuck bad luck.
So on top of teaching them an unrealistic impression of the world, then they've also got social media that trains them into this horrible regret and shame and eats away at their... See, that's terrifying what you have said in your talk about that stuff and the way they use the same sort of... mechanisms that gambling.
I'm just praying that I have that sorted in the next couple of years before my kids get there. Hey, Hugh, I know you're on a time limit here, so I've got to touch on this incredible story about resilience.
Yeah,
if you don't mind,
go.
And footy.
Yeah,
I'm an immigrant. I arrived here when I was seven, and I already thought it was too late for me to play footy.
Yeah,
because I didn't know it wasn't good. So. I just want to say a huge thanks to Auskick and the system now. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The system when I was a kid didn't give me that. But that's not what we're here for.
Yeah, yeah.
I lived my whole life up until my son played footy and I'm standing there basically last year always thinking that man up meant harden the fuck up.
Oh,
right? My whole life. And I'm talking... Going
I
down,
did too.
Watching the Saints play in the 70s. Dan, I told Dan
I'm going,
story.
Oh, come on, that's a bit
goes,
much.
Yeah, so isn't that what it means?
Leave him alone.
So, and it was so weird when I went to kids' footy, and they were the coaches who were normally loving and caring and very nice, and they never say anything mean. Parents, everyone, all the nice Northcote parents
saying,
"Man up." the girls are playing in the other field. Man up. I'm going, fuck, what's going on? This is bizarre. And it dawned on me that it meant, you know, get on your opponent. That's so good. Stick with your opponent. So,
oh, so you knew that, Hugh?
I did.
Of course. Yes.
Oh, God.
It was explained by Port Adelaide.
We were hoping to shock you.
No, I've played a lot of football, so I'm very aware of that. And now that everyone's playing a zone defence now, you might hear a bit less. People aren't manning up anymore.
Yeah. And so are you going to go to Hawthorn and shout them some free sessions so
I did
they
that.
Can spill their guts and you can love them again?
I did that a few years ago, and they were terrific, but I didn't have the ongoing stuff. Port Adelaide's an ongoing program. I go there a lot, whereas Hawthorn was just a one-off. And I got so nervous and I kept making mistakes. And I was like, I think at one point I went, oh, I'm sorry, I just love you guys. I mean, God. That's a good sign. I like that.
I love the project, by the way. We do have to go, but your first episode of your podcast, do you want to name it?
Yeah, so the podcast is called The Imperfects. And I've been doing present talks for 8 years, and I'm just was keen to try something a bit different. And I met a guy called Ryan Shelton, who's a comedian. He's very funny. And he told me a story about his life when we met up and we became mates, and it was not what I was expecting. And I look at him and think, oh, he must have the most perfect life. And then I realize he didn't. And I thought, like everyone, he's got his issues. And I thought, gee, it was good for me to hear that. A reminder, no one's perfect. Plus, I wish more people heard that. And then I thought, everyone keeps saying to me, why don't you do a podcast? And I was like, I don't have any ideas. I don't know. And then I thought of sharing the stories of well-known Australians and their struggles. And and so our first guest was none other than Missy Higgins, who
old lady.
Yeah, that's it.
My old lady, anyway.
Yeah, that's it. she was the first interview we did. And part of me feels sorry for the other guests now, because she was just so open and honest about her life. I was sitting there just going, oh my gosh, this is so much more than I ever expected from any guest would ever have.
It was amazing. I listened to it last night and this morning, and it was amazing. And now I'm just fanboy hanging for the next one.
Yeah, well, the next one's a Port Adelaide footballer who's had some serious issues. So
yeah,
and he was pretty.
And that's going to be huge, getting that vulnerability of footy players up there, because that's such, you know, obviously he's got some.
Yeah,
pretty
totally.
Hardcore history.
Yeah. No, Jack Watts is the next episode. He's had an awful time in the media, caught up in a couple of really bad controversies. A relationship he was in, he was messaging someone he shouldn't have been messaging, and his girlfriend had a shared message account on the laptop, and she found it, took photos of it, and someone got a hold of the photos and spread them everywhere.
Oh,
and so his breakup was very public, and then after that he got in trouble for something else. And it was just, anyway, he talks really honestly about the fact he's still really struggling with the fact he treated someone in a bad way that he loved. And so that's really good as well.
And then it's so massively public on top of all that.
Yeah. Like we've all made mistakes, haven't we? Like we've all fucked up pretty badly. But to have them that public and be in the paper every day, and it must be just.
And the nature of it is it's kind of, you know, you're not seen as a human.
Yeah.
You're seen as like it's a joke, it's funny.
Yep.
And the scandal was you having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever it was. It's
totally.
So people are willing to just go that step further in dehumanizing it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's a fascinating but I mean, what Missy did was she made herself vulnerable, and she said, "Here's the things that I've gone through throughout my life that the feedback we've had." I haven't shared this with Missy yet. I need to find a way to share it with her, but the people contacting us just to say, I needed to hear that so badly. I've been through something similar. I mean, Missy touched on all types of stuff, through depression and through purpose and sexuality. And it just sort of reached different people on different levels, and different people are saying, I needed to hear it because that was so powerful for me. Gosh, that was just so. So yeah, it's called The Imperfects, and it's something I'm really excited about, because you know, the more people who are willing to be like Missy and to be like you guys, really, who are being vulnerable publicly and saying, not curating a perfect version of your life on Instagram, actually saying, no, my life's tough at times. This is why. It's the better off we will all be.
And it's not only is it going to be huge, it feels like it anyway, but I just think it's going to do a lot for everybody, well-known people and everybody, to just stop this incredible, we're on this like kind of rocket ship to hell as far as separating what's real and what isn't, and fame and all that.
Yeah, and fame,
and it's going to do a lot. It's going to be it's going to be huge having well-known people with their vulnerabilities, and people may think twice. Similar to the idiot that you didn't like from AA, suddenly liking him, you probably like people like that that you meet in the future, even if they're not him. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. I think it's a, I really think it's a super valid project. It's going to be amazing.
Well, that's what I wanted for Jack Watts, especially because he's got a lot of people who, he's a tall, blonde, good-looking, very talented footballer who didn't quite live, hasn't quite lived up to the expectations.
Yeah.
And so everyone just jumped on him. And he said, I turn up to work every day and people tell me how much they hate me and how bad I am at my job. And he said, that takes a toll after all. It takes a toll on your family, on you.
Yeah, totally.
And he said, and I remember meeting him and thinking, this is one of the most beautiful people I've ever met in my life. Mm. So I'm looking forward to people to hearing his story, because I'm hoping it just opens people up to go, I've probably been a bit harsh on him. He sounds like a lovely kid.
Yeah, yeah. And that vulnerability helps. Mm. I think I certainly won Missy over with my vulnerability when I shared my
like when you first met her.
When I first met her, with my I just straight away told her about how I tried to be gay for years in my 20s, and I regaled her with a tale of going to a men's sex club and watching a circle jerk in the so I told her all the, I don't know why, I came back from overseas and just told her this stuff, and she thought, well, this is different.
She thought, I'm going to marry this guy.
Yeah, she thought, I'm going to marry this guy, because I think, because most people kind of get all, so you know, have you writing any albums lately? So I just told her that.
It's a very different approach.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure no one's approached her with that before.
But luckily, it turns out I'm not gay. So you want to go out for coffee?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
And whereabouts did you go out for coffee in Broome, by the way? I know Broome well. Where was your first date?
Oh, I don't think. Oh, that's a good question. I've no idea.
It was a while ago.
I have no idea. We were just, we were famous in Broome, in Broome Library for a minute there. I was famous for a second. People kept saying to me, it's just like Notting Hill.
I've thought that already. Yeah. I've actually had that thought already.
Because I was working in the library. And because in a small country town, everyone fucking knows. So everywhere I went, they were like, they'd get me aside and go, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah.
I'm not joking. I've thought that before. It was like a lovely, charming young man.
In a bookshop.
Yeah, a bookshop.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, Hugh, fucking thanks for coming in.
That's a pleasure. Sorry we have to cut it off so I can go home and look after Benji.
No, of course. You must.
No, I love this podcast. What you do is really important work. So it's a pleasure to be on here.
And please come back with more stories to tell.
I will.
About
we'll more
children. About the second one.
Let's do that. When I'm a few months into it, I'll come back and confirm that it's four or five times harder.
I want to hear about the moment when he realizes that she's not going away.
Well, let's do it then. I'll come back when he
the murderous
realizes,
look.
Sure. Yeah. I'll pick your brain about how to...
man up.
Get my kids to man the hell up.
and people should go and see you talk. What you're doing is so important too. It's helping me personally a lot, of course, in my parenting journey.
Fantastic. Well, thanks a million, Hugh.
Pleasure, boys. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.